I work with Midnight Law Collective, and we have done training and legal support for activists for about the last year and 4 months. I started with the Law Collective when I was arrested in Seattle and didn't know what solidarity was until I spent 16 hours on a bus and learned a little bit about what some of the tactics were that folks were using, and found it to be incredibly empowering, and came to the legal team after that and continued to work on trial support for the 600 some odd folks who were arrested in Seattle. So what we do primarily is we've traveled around to various cities throughout the country in the last year doing training and general legal support for folks at the IMF World Bank demonstrations in D.C., the Democratic National Convention in L.A., and some smaller actions with Greenpeace at Vandenberg, and generally training local groups in their rights, as well as we're trying to start a trainer training program where we can teach people to actually give the workshops that we do, because we feel it's very important for people on the streets to understand their rights and to know what is and is not okay, as well as various ideas for how to respond to certain activities on the part of the police. So one of the trainings that we do is around this strategy that we like to call legal solidarity. And it's not, in my mind, I'd like to think of it more as a strategy rather than a coherent set of tactics, because I think at least the groups that we work with like to think of themselves as pretty egalitarian and making decisions as a group, as opposed to having tactics dictated from on high. So, but basically, I thought I would come up with the most basic definition of solidarity possible, so I went to the dictionary to see what Webster had to say. And it says, solidarity is unanimity of attitude or purpose as between members of a group or class, that originated in 1840 and 1850. And I think it's really useful to think about solidarity in a broad term, so that folks can feel empowered that they can come up with their own tactics. But in order to present trainings in a way that people can find them useful, we hope, we divide solidarity tactics into two different phases. There's jail solidarity tactics, and then there's court solidarity tactics, because, of course, you're going to be using different tools depending on the environment that you're in and what you're dealing with. So I'll start with jail solidarity. It's basically a way for folks to protect each other in the legal system. It's a legal system that's, in my mind, rather predatory. It likes to separate out folks who are foreign nationals or perhaps underage and give them harsher treatment, or if they're considered leaders. And it seems that the first goal of the police is to separate these individuals out of the group and to isolate them and make them feel less powerful. So we talk about ways that folks can stick together. One of them that has been used in a lot of cities is people withholding their names, not bringing identification, swapping armbands, getting naked when they're supposed to go to court, various other options. But like I said, I think we try and present these as tactics that folks can choose, pick and choose what's appropriate for a given demand. And some of the demands start out as, you know, we want water, or I think largely it's to get a plea bargain, where the prosecutor will come down to the jail, sit down with the folks and say, okay, what is it that you guys want to get out of this, and hopefully come to some amicable solution, like in Washington, D.C., where folks got jaywalking tickets and didn't have misdemeanor convictions. So that's an example of where it works. Sometimes certain tactics don't work. For example, in Seattle, when folks were withholding their names and we were thinking, great, we're going to put all this pressure on the jail and then they'll have to let us all go. And that wasn't the way it happened. We ended up giving our names and going home and having to reevaluate which tactics we were going to use to continue to struggle for what we believed was justice. So that moves into a different realm, which we call court solidarity. And some of those tactics are demanding your right to a speedy jury trial, a jury trial when it's applicable, and a court-appointed attorney, which puts a lot of pressure on the legal system to provide you with those things within a time frame that's acceptable by law. And that worked really well in Seattle. I think we had over 450 cases dismissed simply because they did not have the time to prosecute them. And we ended up having approximately 5 misdemeanor trials, 4 acquittals, and we ended up getting 1 conviction on a Bannerhang case. So that was really successful. But right now, Midnight Special is working on trying to expand and open up the dialogue about what solidarity can be. And so that's why I offer that definition out of Webster, because I think people can get very creative about what they want to do and what can work. And sometimes, like, for example, in Philadelphia, when folks were withholding their names, they stayed in jail forever, and it was horrible for a lot of folks. Some people said, well, jail solidarity doesn't work. But what I like to say is that solidarity doesn't ever end, and that you have to be able to stick together as a group and be creative about your tactics and always have a backup plan and say, okay, well, if this doesn't work, that doesn't mean that solidarity doesn't work, because that's, I think, diminishes the power of solidarity as a general approach. So in the interest of opening up discussion, I'm going to stop there.
That was great. Okay, Kate's going to talk more about jail solidarity and related issues.
I wanted to say more about some of what Natalie was talking about. And specifically, I wanted to talk about what jail solidarity is and what it isn't. I mean, I'm a big believer in jail solidarity, and I've had some great experiences with it. But I think it's really important to know what you're doing with it and when it's appropriate and when it's not. Because some people, you know, like the people in Seattle, have gotten pretty burned by being taught it, I think, a little bit as a religion instead of as one approach to a situation that might be one way and might be another way. Solidarity is, I think, the best way we have of protecting each other. My first experience with jail solidarity was at Vandenberg Air Force Base in 1983. And what they wanted to do there was people who had been arrested there before, they wanted to give very harsh sentences to, and people who hadn't been arrested there before, they wanted to release with no charges at all. And the majority of us were first timers. Most of us, I think about 400 of us, chose to stay in and not give our names, not identify ourselves. And they were working very hard to identify who the second timers were. So it worked really well to not give names and to try to avoid being photographed in full face and always turn your profile. And at the end of about 10 days, everyone was able to be released. Now, on the other hand, I do want to say that, you know, those of us who were first timers could have gotten out in one day, and instead people were in for 10 days. And a lot of those people, and the conditions were pretty harsh, and some people got dragged off as far as Orange County, and even a group of men got taken to Arizona. A lot of those people did not come back to do the next actions that we organized. So it's something to think about. It might be really empowering at the time, but it might not work for you in the long run. I didn't necessarily feel that way at that time. Because one of the other good things that jail solidarity does is it's a pretty good way to keep the media, it can be a good way to keep media and public attention focused on your action and your issue. At Livermore in 1983, again that summer, where over 1,000 people were in jail for almost 2 weeks, we were on the front page of the local papers every day for 10 days. You know, every day it was what was happening with the demonstrators in the tents at Livermore. And also there were companion pieces almost every day about the lab and what they were doing, the nuclear research they were doing there, and what other groups around the country were doing to stop nuclear research. So that was a very effective way, not just to get us all the same sentences and the kinds of sentences that we wanted, but also to keep some focus on our issue. You know, Dan Ellsberg was on Nightline talking about why we had done the action. On the other hand, if you notice, and I have been in many a demonstration where there's a couple hundred people sitting in jail and nobody's talking about it, it's not on the news, it's not in the paper, then you might need to start thinking about getting out before cutting your losses there. Because if nobody's paying attention to you, the pressure to get you out is also not really as great. It can be an excellent way to build community if you're all being held together in an environment where it's pretty easy to talk. You have a lot of time to network and do workshops and trainings and, you know, get to know each other and really build a lasting movement. And it's a good way to control the kind of sentence that you get. So for instance, I was arrested once in a situation, it was just me and a couple other people, and I was the only one with prior arrests. And I was not willing to take probation, and the judge was not willing to sentence me to jail, and I was not in jail at that time. You know, this was being negotiated in the legal system, and we just, it took months and months, because every time she was like, I was offering to take a 30-day sentence, which was pretty harsh for, you know, a little bit of water-based paint on a recruiting center, and she was just not willing to do it. She wanted me on probation. I was not willing to take probation. It just went on and on. In situations where you have jail solidarity, usually you can succeed in getting a sentence that does not include probation, you know, which is something that the judges like to use, because then they've sort of effectively curtailed demonstrations, you know, militant demonstrations by a large group of people for a period of a year or two. So I think that's really important. What jail solidarity is not? Well, it's not infallible, as we've been saying. It's not a way to get out of jail quickly. And I think that that's a myth that people have been led to believe, that, you know, if you just stick together, you'll all be out in a day or two and not have any charges. In fact, I mean, most of the examples that I've given that where jail solidarity was very effective, we were in jail for well over a week, for a week or two. And, you know, even ultimately in that Livermore action, we all took 14 days, and that was our big success. You know, so if people only have a day or two, if you have a lot of people who have planes to catch, or, you know, have to be back at work, or didn't intend to get arrested, then jail solidarity may not be a good road to go down. It's not the best way of getting less time for the most people. Most people who participate in demonstrations and get arrested could probably, if they spend an hour or two in jail, they could probably walk away without ever spending another minute in jail or doing any community service. So if those people spend, you know, a week or even three more days in jail, they are going to feel that they may feel that they gave up a lot. So you want to be sure that what they're giving it up for is worth it. It's not a good way of getting felonies or serious misdemeanors dropped if there's strong evidence of those crimes having been committed by the people who are charged with them. I mean, it can be a good way of getting bogus felonies and assault charges dropped, and it has been that. But, you know, if the cops have video of people smashing windows, those people are not getting out in a day or two with, you know, or even in probably a week with the same charges as everybody else. So to demand that, to make that your demand and sit in jail for a week or so trying to get that to happen, is probably not going to end up being a good result. What you can do is make part of your demands that those people be given reasonable bail or be eligible, you know, be made eligible to be released on OR, even if they don't come from this area. You know, you can definitely, and you should, use solidarity to try to protect those people, but making it part of your demands, as I think that was one of the mistakes that was made in Seattle, is that people had very lofty goals and thought that they could get everyone released, and there were people involved there who were not getting out. So it's really good to take it one step at a time, and I think it's really important not to go in with all your cylinders sort of firing right away. If you start hunger striking the first hour that you are in jail, then you don't have much of a way to escalate, you know, before you get the lay of the land and see, are they anxious to get us out, or do they have a whole section of their jail that hasn't been opened yet that they're just happy to let us languish in, which was the case in Seattle. You know, do they have a lot of resources like the federal government and can whisk people off all over the country so that they can split us up, or are we all going to be together? Are we in a situation where everybody's being held together, where we have good access to our lawyers, which is part of what makes it possible for you to sort of do the solidarity thing effectively, if you're being able to communicate well with each other among men and women and all the different groups? Or, you know, do you have a couple people here and a couple people there in general population, people who maybe haven't been in jail before and might be freaked out and not have good access to phones? You know, if you're in that situation, jail solidarity may not work out for you. So I think it's really good to, you know, give yourselves a little time, like, you know, eat and try and get water and try and use the bathroom and try and like get people a little bit chilled out before you immediately start, you know, your most militant forms of protest. The other thing I have to say is that in my experience, taking off your clothes never ever works. It seems to be a myth that male guards will not touch naked women prisoners, and it's it hasn't been true in any situation where I've seen or heard of it being used in. So generally, I would throw that one out the window. And the last thing I wanted to say, and I know I'm a little over time, is that it's really important because it is not the same in each situation. In San Francisco, for instance, you know, where demonstrators are hardly ever charged, you know, jail solidarity usually, and they have a kind of Baroque way of putting people on calendar for arraignment, jail solidarity pretty much never accomplishes anything. In other situations, it accomplishes a lot. So it's really important to be working with and respecting the people, the lawyers and the activists in the community where you are. And unfortunately, that's something that I have heard hasn't always been the case in the recent sort of round of anti-globalization demonstrations. The lawyers that you're working with may not be your idea of activist lawyers. Maybe they're public defenders or, you know, maybe they're other kind of criminal lawyers. But generally speaking, if they're working with you, there are people with a lot of principles and there are people who see, they know the players and they see what's going on in that community every day. And they actually are very committed to getting people out of jail, which is, you know, something people who have generally a lot more problems getting out of jail than us. So like, it's really important to respect their principles and, you know, to be clear if, well, we don't agree with you, this isn't the way that we want to approach it, but we really do appreciate your being here and your willingness to work with us and the experience that you have. Because generally, especially if you're going to trial, if you're taking a lot of cases to trial, you're going to need those people and you don't want to have totally pissed them off.
I basically want to register my total agreement with everything that was just said, and said very, very well by both speakers. It just in terms of context, I think of the jail solidarity discussion we're having now in some ways the same way I think of the civil disobedience discussion and how we do civil disobedience, which is that the idea of civil disobedience, I guess, I mean, there's Gandhi, but in the United States, the nonviolent civil disobedience that began the civil rights movement in the South was a dangerous, heroic, utterly frightening, life-threatening situation where people went into the jaws of horror and survived. And they went into jail singing. They remained singing freedom songs while they were in jail. As far as I know, they did not sit down and demand of those Southern racist sheriff bastards, you know, that they see their lawyer before they get off the bus or they're not going to be fingerprinted and so on. I mean, they knew they were in for it and they were going to stay together as best they could. For people who've read Nelson Mandela's autobiography of his survival in Robben Island, they maintained solidarity. Robben Island was a university for the liberation movement in South Africa. They maintained solidarity with each other in that, again, you know, horrendous hell of a prison, and they succeeded in getting over years and years and years some amelioration of their condition. So then you jump to us now, you know, primarily white, primarily, you know, educated. In terms of civil disobedience has become sort of like, you know, it's like inflation. You know, it used to be, you know, worth, you know, each act was, you know, worth thousands. Now, you know, it's pennies. I mean, we all, I mean, I dare say in this room, you know, we've all been arrested, you know, a phenomenal number of times. And most of the times, you know, we've walked in and, you know, spent a little bit of time in jail and essentially walked out and gotten a citation, you know, passing as we do the primarily people of color who are in there, not in our mode, and so on. And that's sort of the context that I see, you know, the discussion of jail solidarity. And I guess I agree with, I mean, I've had truly wonderful experiences of jail solidarity. The one that Kate mentioned of Livermore with 1,000 people in those circus tents was totally wonderful. I mean, for one thing, it was, you know, what, I mean, 2 weeks? How long was it? It was a bunch of time, you know, away from the obligations of, you know, earning a living and taking care of the kids and so on. Hanging out with your buddies. I mean, I read all of The Color Purple in there. We had a you know, wonderful educational sessions with Dan Ellsberg talking about, I learned a lot about, you know, Pentagon, you know, armament policies. It was great, you know. But just as the system of repression, you know, always learns from us, so we always have to learn and not assume that we're going to be able to repeat over and over again the same thing. And I think it is really dangerous when one tactic becomes a sort of a gospel and one that we do over and over again. I think we've seen some, and Kate alluded to some of the problems of that, that happens. And I mean, the example that I think of is a friend of mine in Seattle who went through our trainings, you know, was into doing, you know, nonviolent, you know, doing jail solidarity. The decision was he wasn't going to get off the bus. Now, I'm not sure exactly why they decided at that point not to get off the bus. I think the demand was to see a lawyer before they were arraigned, which is, again, I mean, there may be a good reason to do it, but frankly, if you're going through the legal, you know, the system, you get busted, you know, you just don't get, you may have a right to do it, but you, they just, you don't see lawyers before you're, not before you're arraigned, excuse me, before you're booked. That's what I meant, before you're booked. So anyway, they were going to stay on the bus, and, you know, the cop said, well, you know, okay, if you're going to, you know, don't stay on the bus. You know, we're giving you this land. They went on and on. Finally, they said, okay, we're going to do an extraction. An extraction is what happens in prisons when a prisoner refuses to leave their jail. And it's really ugly. And so what they did is they brought in this, you know, these cops. And what they did is they took my friend who was sitting on the floor and they twisted his arm. And they twisted his arm and they twisted his arm until it broke. And then took him off the bus. You know, okay, there may be a reason for doing that. It may be that you are really protecting something important. You know, but you really need to know why you're doing it. You need to be aware of the level of risk that you're engaging in and why you're doing. And you should not overestimate your essentially your white skin privilege. You should not think that you're going to be able to go in there and they're going to be nice. You know, they are not going to be nice, generally. They do not like threats to your authority. And they see it when you're in there, they got you in their place, you know. Whereas they say there isn't any TV cameras and, you know, we can do whatever the hell we want or whatever. I'm not saying that to frighten us. I'm not saying that's not to do solidarity. I'm just saying let's be real about this, and let's be clear about why we do the things when we're in jail and aware of the range of possibilities, the range of solidarities that people have been talking about.
This is great. Okay, let's take some questions.